Let me tell you what you've missed. You've missed some of the best stuff you've never seen. You missed some of the best photos that you've never seen. Also, it has not been recorded. So you really missed it. But I'm glad you're here this morning. What we've been talking about, we've been following in the steps of Paul. And for this year, instead of, as I ordinarily do, this is our 25th year to have VBS. And as a rule, I've always just taken the same subject matter like I'd have been studying usually, Luke 15 today, because that's in the other classes, and just accommodate that and make my own material for the adults. But this time, I thought that I would make use of our recent trip to Greece and Turkey, focusing on the book of Acts and journeying in the steps of Paul. Not trying to look at all the journeys, but just focusing on the journeys of Paul, the portions of the journey from the second journey. We started at Troas, and we've completed. We've gone with Paul. We followed. We've seen every place Paul went that's mentioned in Macedonia and Greece, with the exception of the part where it says he passed through Apollonia. But otherwise, every place mentioned in Greece and Macedonia, we've looked at that. And so we're going to continue with that today. But I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take just a few minutes. I won't take long. But already what we have done, like yesterday, we were talking about Corinth. And Paul's second longest stay. And we talked about how, as a place, how important this is to actually five letters. Because we showed that from Corinth, second journey, Paul wrote 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. And then also, Corinth received two New Testament letters, obviously, 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians. And then on journey number 3, it was from Corinth that Paul wrote the book of Romans. So this place is where Paul stayed, second longest of all his stays. And again, it is the recipient and the point of origin for five of the New Testament, a total of five of the New Testament letters. Well, having said that, Ann made the point to me. In fact, she was talking before class and before we went into some of those aspects of it. She was asking about some material that would just show the connection. She said, I'd like to know all of Paul's epistles, how they fit in with the book of Acts. And there were others that said, me too. You see these ears? I listen to you. So I'm going to take just a minute to, you know, I've kind of got to do what Ann says. You know, we're kin, so I have to do what she says. But let me show you something, and I will tell you that if you will do this, it's not too hard, and you can commit it to memory, and just make that part of your knowledge. And you can reach the point that when you're reading Acts, you automatically are thinking these things. It's just part of your knowledge. You can do that. And it's not really that hard. In fact, it's as easy as falling off a log, almost. Okay, so here's the thing that we want to do. You might say, well, okay, how do you come up with these dates? And we've already shown how you can come up with some of these dates. Let me show you how you can use a starting point. In Acts chapter 12, it's going to tell us about the death of Herod Antipas. He's just called Herod. I meant to say Herod Agrippa, not Antipas. Herod Agrippa the First. He's just called Herod. But you know, later in Acts 26, there's another one. He's called Agrippa. Well, that's this man's son. And he's actually Herod Agrippa the Second, the one in Acts 26. But anyway, going back to Acts 12, that Herod that had James the Apostle put to death and then was going to kill Peter, except with divine intervention, Peter was not spared. Peter was not killed. He was spared, I mean to say. And so after that, the text says Herod left Jerusalem and went to Caesarea. The reason he went to Caesarea is that's where the ruler stayed. That's where the palace was. They were just in Jerusalem some of the time. They didn't live there ordinarily. But he went there and he made an oration to the people. He was at the theater. And the people were saying, the voice of a God and not of a man. And he just let them render to him praise that's only due to God. And this text says the Lord struck him so that he died. And so it's known from history that the year that he died is A.D. 44. So that's just a helpful point. You know, when you know when these kings and emperors and provincial rulers reign, you know, we mentioned Claudius yesterday, and we were talking about Aquila and Priscilla. So that's just kind of a handy point of reference. So very soon after that event, in other words, what ties this in is in Acts 13, you've got the Spirit saying, "Separate me, Paul and Barnabas, for the work that I've chosen them to do." So journey number one begins in close proximity to Herod's death. And it takes some time. And so we're looking at about 44 to 49 AD. Now just knowing that is helpful, because it just takes two chapters to tell where Paul went. And here you are in your chair, you're reading Acts 13. You read Acts 14. At the end of Acts 14, they're done. They assemble with the church at Antioch, and they tell about the doors that God has opened, what God has done. And I love the way that words it. They're not talking about what we did, but it's the doors of faith that God has opened. It's what God did. But I'm just saying, how long does it take you to read two chapters? Not long. But you'll notice in Acts 14 at verse 23, it's going to make the point on the return trip that they did what? They ordained elders in, how does that go? In every church. So these various cities that he's been. And so that's going to make sense if you understand that in those places, like we mentioned yesterday, which yesterday was not first journey, yesterday was second journey, but yesterday we mentioned Acts 18 and verse 8, where it specifies that Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, was among those baptized at Corinth. Well, that's going to be the case because Paul keeps going to the synagogue first, and there's going to be some knowledgeable people with families, with good backgrounds, with teaching skills, that in a short time they can be qualified. But the thing you need to understand is Paul is not going to appoint anybody that's not qualified. One of the qualifications is not a novice. So how can you appoint people that are not novices? The point I'm making is there has to be the passing of a little bit of time. So I start out now, and the thing to remember about this first journey, a lot of important things happen, but there is no record of any letters being written there. So none of the letters belong to the first journey. Okay? Then you say, what about journey number two? Well, here's the thing about it. Have you noticed when you have to deal with local problems in the church, that outreach kind of stalls out? Have you ever noticed that? You let a church have internal problems, and what does that do to their outreach? I don't care how active you are, how many classes you've been setting up. You start having internal trouble, you got to fix that. And that takes time and resources. And see, there's not any journeys taking place in chapter 15 till the bottom of the chapter when we start journey number two. And the reason is, that momentum has to stall out because their brethren causing trouble. In the first part of Acts 15, it says they're saying this, that unless you're circumcised and keep the law of Moses, you cannot be saved. Well, that could not be allowed to pass. They were perverting the gospel. And so Paul has to go down. I say go down. It's south. It's 300 miles from Antioch down to Jerusalem, except you always go up to Jerusalem. So they went up to Jerusalem as they went down. And others were there. So this thing is dealt with, and it's really a matter, there's not any new revelation. Peter stands up, and he tells about what happens back in Acts 10. Paul and Barnabas, talk about the door of faith God has opened among the Gentiles, so you have a proved apostolic example. And then James, not the apostle, he died in Acts 12. But James, the half-brother of the Lord, a leading brother of the church in Jerusalem, he stood up and he's quoting from the prophet Amos about the bringing in of the Gentiles. So what you have is a combination of men speaking to show that God really has already answered this. And so that's how the matter was settled, which gives you a good way to deal with problems. You look at what is written. You look at direct statements, approved apostolic example, and draw necessary conclusions. That's how you deal with problems. That's Acts 15. But then as the chapter concludes, we're going to start journey number two. And this time it's not Paul and Barnabas, it is Paul and Silas. And so you're looking at about 50 to 53. And this is AD. Do you remember yesterday that we could pinpoint Gallio, who is mentioned by name in Acts 18, as the proconsul there at Corinth? And we said we know when he was proconsul. And so the year for that was 51 AD. So that helps us to see that at this point in Paul's journey, of course, Paul's at Corinth more than a year. He's there a year and a half. But we know that overlaps with Gallio because it says that he was called before his judgment seat. So here's the time from 50 to 53 AD. That includes the year and a half at Corinth plus the other travel that he did. And it's during this time you've got the letters of 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. That's where they go. He's at Corinth for this time. Remember, he's joined at, when he's at Athens, he sends for Timothy and Silas to come with all speed. And so, but he doesn't stay at Athens long, so he goes to Corinth, and it's from here that he writes these two letters. And he's so concerned about this big congregation, a great multitude, the text says, of brand new converts. And he really commends them. He's worried about them. He wants them to be faithful. Yeah, these men would serve as messengers. He's not dropping it in the post office. So, yeah, they could.
Well, I was saying that he's asked for it to come quickly in terms of absence.
That's exactly right. So that would be often the means of that. Journey number 3. Look at the dates I've given: 53/54 to 58 A.D. Now, when you think of this, 3 years of this is going to be at Ephesus. But it's going to take some time to get there, and he's going to do some things after there. But this will take you to 58, to AD 58. Now let's see what happens here. Now I will say this, that of all the Pauline epistles, that the book of Galatians is the one that's hardest to fit. And see, for our purpose now, I've got a lot more that I want to cover, so I can't go into detail on this. I can just say, like, consult Bob Waldron's book, Go Tell the Good News, which is Acts and the Epistles, and look at his treatment of Galatians and where he puts it. And independent of even reading that, in my study, I put this with the third journey, and I noticed afterward Bob does too. So here's the way I look at it. Bob says it, I say it. What more do you need? But do your own study. But on this, what I'm actually just kidding, sort of, on that. But the thing is, this is going to be the one that there will be variance on as far as where people put it. And there's, but you sift through the arguments, you see what best fits the evidence. Where I put it is early on the third journey. That's where Bob puts it. That's where Maurice Barnett puts it, if you know of him. But others will put it at different places. They're just wrong about that. Now, 1 Corinthians, what did we say yesterday? 1 Corinthians was written from Ephesus. How do you know that? Well, in 1 Corinthians 16, in the closing part, he says, I'm going to remain in Ephesus till, so he mentions that. He's there, he's going to stay there a bit longer. Then he's left Ephesus, he's on his way to Corinth, but to get to Corinth, he has to go through Macedonia. And from Macedonia, when he meets with Titus, that's when he writes 2 Corinthians. And all that's going to be found within the letter of 2 Corinthians. Chapters 2 and chapter 7 are going to give you that information. So he's on his way to Corinth, then he arrives at Corinth, and it is from there that he writes the book of Romans. So what you have then on this third journey, you've got four letters, Galatians, and I think that was from Ephesus, but 1 Corinthians for sure from Ephesus, 2 Corinthians, Macedonia. Now Macedonia, could mean Philippi, it could mean Thessalonica, it could mean Berea. It just says Macedonia, that he met Titus in Macedonia. Doesn't say where. But from Corinth, Paul mentions Erastus, his host. He mentions Phoebe when he's writing the Romans, who is a servant of the church at Cenchrea that's on her way to Rome. So again, if you say, well, how do you know that? Well, he tells us that. That's included like in the closing part of the letter. And this is how it ties in the book of Acts. In other words, in Acts 20, we're going to see, for example, in Acts 20, journey number 3, when it talks about his going to Macedonia, and then he goes on down to Achaia, that's what he's doing while he's there. Among the things he's doing, he's writing this right here. But in his return, he's going to be, I say he's imprisoned, what we have here is imprisoned at Caesarea. That's kind of using shorthand. He's really imprisoned at Jerusalem. But after there's a plot to take his life for his own protection, a military escort takes him from Jerusalem to Caesarea, and it will be there that he stays for 2 years. Now, no record of any letters being written at this time. And as he's standing before Festus, he appeals to Agrippa, He appeals to Caesar. Agrippa is going to hear the case too. But he's going to make that appeal that he had as a Roman citizen, a right to do so. And so this will result in his going to Rome before the emperor. It turns out this is going to take about 6 months because there's the shipwreck. There's the voyage first, then there's a shipwreck. And then they have to winter at Malta. And then from Malta, they get on another ship. It's an Alexandrian grain ship, the text says. And they sail from Malta to Syracuse. Then they cross the strait and they go to Rhegium and up to Puteoli, and then from there up to Appia Forum and three taverns, and from there on the way to Rome. So when he arrives at Rome, here's what a lot of people say. You know, Paul is in prison at Rome. That is incorrect. Paul is a prisoner under house arrest. The text says he dwelt in his own hired dwelling for 2 years. And people could come to him, though he could not go out, and he's chained at all times to soldiers. During this time, he writes four letters. And these four letters are Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon. In all four of these letters, he makes reference to his chains, to his bonds. But he also makes reference in this letter to his expectation to be released. In fact, when he's writing Philemon, he says, prepare for me a lodging. It's that certain. You know, go ahead and get lodging ready for me. Go ahead and get quarters ready for me, because I expect to be dismissed soon. So every indication is that that is what happened. He's released. And then he does some more preaching. And this doesn't fit in with the book of Acts, because up here is where the book of Acts closes. See that? See where we've noted that? So, but that doesn't mean the gospel preaching stops. That's just where Acts stops. So what happens next is, after his release, he mentions to leaving Timothy at Ephesus and charges that he gave him. He writes Titus and he says, for this cause I left you in Crete to set in order the things that are lacking and appoint elders in every city. Well, you don't read about Paul preaching in Crete and leaving Titus in Crete in the book of Acts. This is something that happened later. But then he again is arrested. And then he writes his 13th and his last letter, and that is 2 Timothy. And at this time, he's not under house arrest. At this time, he's in the state prison. At this time, he's not talking about being released. He's talking about his imminent death. He is cold. He left his coat at Troas, and he asked that Timothy bring that. He wants some reading material. He says, bring the books, and especially the parchments. He says, Luke is with me. He says, bring Mark. He's useful to me for ministry. Now you think about that. As Paul was certain that he faced the end, he wanted to be surrounded by his books and his friends. And if Timothy was able to do that, which, you know, the thing is, I know he would if he could. It's just we don't have a passage that says he did or he didn't. But that's what Paul asked him to do, and it's unthinkable he didn't because of all we know about him. But think of the end as being Luke is there. Luke wrote Luke and Acts. Paul is there. He wrote 13 of the 27 books. Mark was to be there. He wrote the Gospel of Mark. Timothy was coming. He received 1 and 2 Timothy. Isn't that something? There in one setting where you'd have those four men together as Paul was facing the end. So, and this is what you have. Now this doesn't, my purpose now is not to deal with the general epistles, because they don't fit in the book of Acts. The book of Acts has to do with, especially when we're considering the journeys of Paul, we're talking about Paul's efforts, and he wrote 13 of the New Testament books. So this is where they fit in with the time period and with the journeys. And you know, you can put the passages with the journeys. You know how to do that. Chapter 13 and 14 are going to be the first journey. And the second one starts at the end of 15 and goes on into whatever verse in chapter 18. And it's not a neat division. And then it continues with the latter part of 18 on through chapter 21 is the way the three journeys work out. So just commit that to memory. Just make that a part of your knowledge. and it will help you. So as you turn to any of those epistles, you've got the background in mind. Okay? So, are y'all ready to try? Should I ask, is there any question? Yes? Okay. Under house arrest, it's not a case that he had just appealed as a Roman citizen. The governors knew he was not, they knew what this was about. They knew he posed no security threat, and he was awaiting a hearing before the emperor, and it wasn't a case at this point that there's any pressure to do anything else with Paul. When he got there, the Jewish population in Rome, you remember, they had not even heard any charges, so there could it wouldn't be unusual. His freedom is taken away; he's chained at all times. So at this point, it's just a more relaxed situation in terms of he's appealing as a Roman citizen for his case to be heard, as opposed to them making charges against him as an evildoer and pulling him in. In fact, you remember, Festus was asking Agrippa, he said, "You need to help me because I don't even know what to say for the charges." So that would be a factor. Anybody else? Anything else?
Would the three shipwrecks that you mentioned in 2 Corinthians 11, would there be any indication anywhere where those might have taken place? Because it takes place after you write in 2 Corinthians 11.
Right, the one in Acts 28 that we know about was after that. That's another one. Yeah, and all we can say is just some of the times that he's sailing, and but I don't know. I don't know how to fit those in, except he's writing that at that point in the third journey. But at that point, there had been thrice I was shipwrecked. A day and a night he spent in the deep. Just imagine clutching onto a board, in the Mediterranean. But yeah, I mean, those are things somewhere in the travel by sea is where that happened. But I, don't have anything else to go on except that quick reference. Well, I've got a lot to cover, so let me show you what we have done. Yes, this week so far we have taken our time, and we have shown you Troas. We looked at Neapolis. We saw Philippi, and we walked around at Amphipolis, and we passed through Apollonia without seeing anything there. Then we went to Thessalonica, which is right on the sea. But all of this is linked by the Ignatian Way. This is I-65 through that part of the world, so to speak. But we have to get off that highway and went down to Berea. Brethren took him to the sea and then escorted him to Athens. And then he stayed there just a very short time and went to Corinth, where he stayed a year and a half. And we talked about that yesterday. And then the southern port, which was Cenchrea, touched down briefly at Ephesus and made his way on to Caesarea, to Jerusalem, and then back at Antioch. So this brings me to our study for this morning as we continue walking in the steps of Paul. And what's going to happen is we're going to spend more of our time. Paul spent most of his time right here at Ephesus. Now, do you remember that when we started this off on Monday, that the statement was made in Acts 16, Luke says that the Spirit of the Lord did not suffer Paul to preach in Asia, Bithynia, or Mysia. And so that's when they passed on to Troas, heard that Macedonian call in the vision. But that was journey number two. Now we're looking at number three. And so here's the strategy. Journey number one, of course, includes Cyprus. Journey number one is going to be what's nearer, like so. Journey number one is here. Journey number two is the more distant, over here. Journey number three is going to close the gap by getting in the middle. So that's the strategy God has. The closer in Galatia, the more distance in Macedonia and Achaia, and then getting what is in between with Asia. And with Ephesus, it's more than just Ephesus, as we shall see. So Ephesus, a very important city. It was the fourth largest city in the world of its day. The road, land routes came together, converged from Mesopotamia here, and it had access to the Aegean Sea, so it's the water and the land, and a great population. It's estimated 250,000 people lived here at this time. This is the theater that is in Ephesus. And again, this is mentioned in the Bible in Acts chapter 19. And the way it comes up is that the whole city filled this place up, and for the space of 2 hours were shouting, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And so that means 25,000 people were here on that occasion, and the hills round about were ringing and echoing with the shout of that multitude. And here we are actually on the theater, and it gives you a different view. And I'll tell you, buildings come and go, but you're still getting a feel of where Paul was for these 3 years. For example, when he was in the theater and looked up here, he'd see that mountain just like that and this. Now, where it's green here, that was water. That, see how flat that is? That's silted in. See this road here? That's the harbor road. And so we can say for sure when Paul left, as the text says he did, Ephesus, he walked right down that road, got on a ship right there, and the inlet to the sea was about 3 miles distant at that time, straight that way. So again, looking at the view Paul did, here we are at the top looking down, give you a feel for that, and this is the harbor road. This is looking back away from the theater at one of the main streets there of Ephesus. The Castor River was the inlet into the Aegean Sea. It's silted up now, and there was the river god. And you remember how we've said every day this week that everywhere you go in the Bible lands, you see indications of idolatry. It permeated the society. And if you lived in the first century, you'd have to make a choice. You couldn't go along with the way of the world. You'd have to make a deliberate decision to leave that and be a New Testament Christian, because, again, idolatry was everywhere. For example, this is the Flavian Temple, the Flavian Dynasty. This would include Vespasian and Titus and Domitian, for example, such emperors as that. And so if you lived at Ephesus, there was a cult center of worship, the temple, where you would go in and you would burn incense to Caesar. I say you, meaning the citizens there. Now at the Ephesus Museum, this is the bust of an imperial priest. And what that means is that there were men like what this represents inside those temples. And you would, for a fee, you would buy incense, and they would assist you in worship, and they would help you, and you'd burn incense. They would officiate in these religious services, and you would say, "Caesar is Lord." Using the word "you" generically, I'm saying that's where the pressure was. But if you were a Christian, you would say, "Jesus is Lord." You couldn't say, "Caesar is Lord." And there was the clash. And this is what so much of the book of Revelation is about. And when people think the book of Revelation is just about the destruction of Jerusalem and AD 70, they're failing to see what the Roman world was all about. I'm not depreciating what happened in AD 70, but the persecution throughout the empire by Rome for God's people failing to engage in this cult worship, that was a serious issue. And Ephesus was designated as the Neocorus, the temple keeper officially for imperial cult worship. Let me show you what this is. This is the commercial agora. You know, we've used that word agora, we've used the word marketplace, we've used the word forum, because all of that will apply to public areas like this. And this is where people like Demetrius, the silversmith, would have had his shop. And he enters in on the picture because he calls together his fellow craftsmen and he says, "Folks, we got a problem. If this man Paul keeps preaching like he is, our trade's going to come into disrepute. People are going to stop buying these silver shrines that we make of the temple and of the goddess Diana, and we're going to be out of business." And it would have been somewhere in this area that he would have had his shop, and his fellow craftsmen would have also. And that's when they all got mad and this uproar started, and they journeyed just really from here, no more than 100 or 200 yards to the theater that I was just showing you. And they went there and just piled in. And so Acts chapter 19 is saying that. Again, this is journey number three. This is journey number three. So this, they made silver shrines of Diana. The shrine would be a little model of the temple. That's what the shrine is, a model of the temple of the goddess Diana. Now we saw the Parthenon, and we mentioned that was one of the seven wonders of the world. And we said that that housed a big statue of the goddess Athena. Well, the same thing was true there at Ephesus. That was also one of the wonders of the world. And inside there was a big statue of the god of the goddess Artemis. But this is where that happened there in Acts 19. Now, this is an artist's conception. We know the size of it because you can very well see. I walked all around the foundational structure of this. But again, this is suggested by artists of what this would have looked like. And again, on inside would have been a statue of that. And I try to get photos from different perspectives. At a point of elevation, I could look down, and this right here is the lone column that's still left. And let me just trace it. See how this goes? See some rocks, some blocks there, and kind of comes across here and then cuts across and following like so. It's a rectangular shape. And can you, how good are your eyes? Do you have trained eyes? Can you see that right up there is a stork? Right up there is a stork. And every time I've seen this, and this was my third time in March to see this, or April, 1st of April really, every time I've done that, there's been a stork up there. I often have wondered if God has a, if this is somehow that God has a bit of a sense of humor about this. That here what was competing for divine worship as a stork sitting up there making its nest, doing its business. And it's almost like, take that, Artemis. But here you are, as I say, it's kind of a swampy marshland. Now let me tell you something. You're in a comfortable chair, seat, and it just takes a couple of minutes for me to show you this. When this was excavated not too long ago, an archaeologist spent 5 years at this site excavating every inch. And a lot of what I'm showing you, men have given years of their lives in research and in excavation, working at the site, so that someone can go there, take photos, and share it with people, that I can bring it to you. But a lot has been done for us to be able to appreciate the biblical world, the setting of the biblical world. So there's Mr. Stork, or Mrs. Stork, as the case may be, and you're looking at one of the seven wonders of the world, and this was what was inside. This is the fertility cultus Artemis that was worshipped in some of the most perverted and immoral kinds of ways. Now we're jumping into Acts 19 in verse 10, when it says this went on for the space of 2 years. Well, what does that mean? So context. We're 3 months at the synagogue, but then we leave the synagogue and we go to the school of Tyrannus. I'm told that the school would have been in session in the morning, and in the afternoon, people would have been taking a siesta or doing something else, that there would not have been school in the afternoon. And some have suggested that what Paul could have done, and the reason it says that he's reasoning every day in the school, is that when school was not in session, like the afternoons, when it would have been vacant, that this would have been an ideal time for Paul to be there with whoever wanted to come. That continued for the space of 2 years. And see, it's not just a case that just Ephesus heard, because this was the principal city of Asia Minor, of Asia Minor, Ephesus was. But the text says, so that all who lived in the province of Asia, both Jews and Greeks, heard the word of the Lord. Now let me show you what that means. What that means is that people are there on business, but they're taught the truth by Paul. They learn the truth and they take it home to places you'll read about in the Bible that Paul didn't personally go. But he taught people, they went there, and they taught people back home. Now let me show you what that means. You see here, this is Ephesus. 100 miles east is Colossae. Here's the situation. Here's Colossae. Receives one of our New Testament letters written when Acts closes, written when Paul's under house arrest. Remember that, one of those four letters? So there's Colossae, but there's also a congregation at Hierapolis, and then there's one at Laodicea, and all these are very close together. It, from here, it's 6 miles to here. From here, it is 10 miles to here, all close together. And Paul is going to write to Colossae and mention Epaphras has a deep concern for you, for those who are in Laodicea, and Hierapolis. So Epaphras has a deep concern for all of you, brethren, the text says. And Paul says, greet the brethren who are at Laodicea. And when you read this letter, which is Colossians, See that it's read in the church of the Laodiceans. They've got one over there. Read the one from Laodicea. He doesn't say the one to Laodicea, but read the one from Laodicea. Read the one that they have. That likely would have been the letter to the Ephesians. That was intended from the beginning to be a circular letter. But Laodicea has it now. Read the one that they have. And so, see, Paul doesn't go to any of these places. But he's writing a letter to Colossians. He mentions in there, I've heard of your faith, you know, and he knows some of the people. But he doesn't travel to these places. This is Laodicea in the foreground. You're standing at Laodicea. You're looking across the Lycus River. This right here is a part of Hierapolis right there. And this is the theater for the Roman city of Hierapolis. But a church met in this area. And Colossae has not been excavated, but this is Colossae. So you have a tri-cities situation of three churches in three cities that are nearby, growing out of Paul's work in Acts 19 at Ephesus. Does that make sense to you? And it's that kind of thing that is happening. And this is why you're reading in the book of Revelation 2 and 3 about the seven churches of Asia, and you start reading about other churches of Asia, and where did they get started? Well, I'm not saying Paul necessarily did all of that, but Acts 19 and verse 10 says that all that were in Asia heard the word. And so a case can be made certainly for these to the east that received, that were in Colossians and mentioned in the book of Colossians. Well, we've got to leave Ephesus. So the text says after this uproar that we've just mentioned had ceased, what does Paul do? He departed to go to Macedonia. Now, Ann, here's what you would do. You'd say before leaving, he writes 1 Corinthians. When he arrives in Macedonia, he writes 2 Corinthians. When he'd gone over that region and encouraged them, why does he say that region? Because in that region, you've got Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea. What did Paul do? He's already started the churches. Now he builds them up. And he came to Greece. What's at Greece? The church at Corinth, the church at Cenchrea. While at Greece, he's at Corinth, he writes Romans. At this time, put this here in the book of Acts. And so we're going to get on a ship, just like we did journey number 2 at Cenchrea, and then we're going to go, right? Yes, but things change. That's what he was going to do. He had intended to sail. He's just about to sail to Syria. So from Corinth, he would have gotten on that a ship there at Cenchrea. But instead, he returns through Macedonia. He retraces his steps on journey number 3. See, instead of getting on the ship at Cenchrea and sailing back, it says he was going to return through Macedonia. And so he's returning right through the area that we've been traveling through, you know, this week thus far. And so the power of God is amazing. God's almighty power is seen in that he turns seemingly incidental happenings into the occasion so that when he gets through writing about those incidentals, we have all things that we need that pertain to life and godliness. In other words, this passage that you've heard brethren stand up every Sunday morning and read in Acts 20 and verse 7, that on the first day of the week at Troas, they gathered together to break bread and Paul preached to them. How many times have you heard that read? How many hundreds of times? But as you read in Acts, it so happens there at Troas because of a change in plans. That wasn't where he planned to go. He planned to sail to Syria from Corinth. But instead, he goes back over land through Macedonia, and that means he'll sail across the Aegean and then land in Troas. But that's the place where we have that one passage that mentions on the first day of the week, the disciples were gathered together to break bread. So what seems to us to be occasional or incidental, God is able to use that, and as he records what he does about those situations, the totality of what we have is the complete revelation of God's word. So here we are, we're at Troas. And what I want to do is to show you a little bit about Troas. And we just have, 5 minutes left? I'm going to show you a little about Troas, and then I want to show you some things about Assos. This is silted up. Sand is up there, kind of silted up here. But this is where Paul landed in the boat. This is the harbor at Troas. And so it's well defined because there's still water in it. Of course, you couldn't get a ship in it now. Would y'all like to walk around a little bit? Okay, let's walk around a little bit. It's interesting. You know, this, you're going to see salt as the water evaporates. See that? Because it's ocean, it's salt water, seawater. But you'll see the remains of the harbor. It's just interesting to me. You're looking around and you think, wow, this is Roman stuff. It's old. But as I walked all the way around this, and you see stuff like that all the way around. Very fascinating. See that just mostly buried, but it's just harbor columns like that all the way around here. Some of these sticking up like this, it's all overgrown like so, making way on around here to the Aegean Sea itself. So here we are where Paul landed in Acts chapter 20 as he's making his way back to Jerusalem. Now, at Troas, there's been some stuff recently excavated. This is just now uncovered. In fact, you still see tape there. You can't go over in there. It's not even open yet for, with signs and so forth. But a lot of things are being uncovered that would have been Roman ruins in Paul's day. Here is a pagan temple. A head of the god Dionysus was found here. That's the wine god. So it could have been a temple to the wine god. Notice you can see the sea up here. What we are at, we're at the Acropolis. Down below is the harbor. Remember, cities have the upper city, then they have the lower city. So this is at Troas where the disciples came together to break bread. All of what I'm showing you right now, that has just been excavated. And then there's something unusual that happens. The text says that Paul told his fellow travelers to go on. They were to go on in the ship, and he's going to go by foot to Assos, and he'll join them there. And so you just read right over that, right? Assos here, Troas there. Paul's going to walk from here to here. They're going to meet him with a ship right there. As the crow flies, it's 21 miles from Assos to Troas. The Roman road, it would take 31 miles. It would take you 2 days to walk it. You know what Paul had been doing? He had been up all night. You know, the text says he preached till midnight. The reason he stopped at midnight is because Eutychus did a very rude thing. Eutychus fell out the window and died. And that's very rude to do that because it interrupts services. You got to just stop what you're doing. And Paul had to stop what he's doing and raise Eutychus from the dead. But then it says after that, he continued his speech till break of day. So don't say Paul preached till midnight. Read the rest of it. He preached all night long. And after preaching all night long, he begins walking by himself. In Acts the 20th chapter, the Spirit is testifying in every city that he goes to that bonds and persecution await him in Jerusalem. This will be one of his last opportunities to breathe fresh air, to walk, to be by himself. And he does that. He has a little time to do that. And this is the road that he walked on, making his way to Assos, which is right there. The sea is right here. The ship is right down below. The ship came there. We're at the Acropolis of Assos right there. And at the Acropolis, you'll see a temple to the goddess Athena. Model of that. And then the text will say that there's the harbor. They got on the ship there. And it says, when he met us, Luke is writing, he met us at Assos. We took him on board and came to Mytilene. Mytilene is on the island of Lesbos, and from Assos you can see the island of Lesbos. Mytilene is on the back side there. So we're traveling in the footsteps of Paul. Spiritually, we want to follow him as he followed Christ. Darrell, I see our time has gone right on the money here.